Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I'm your host, Dan Canobio. Thank you for joining us. We got a big show planned for you today. Not only is it Tyson Fury fight week. Who's ready to see Tyson Fury back in the ring? I know I am. And I heard that Deontay Wilder will be in attendance. He's making the trip over to UK to see this one go down. And I can see it right now. I can see Tyson Fury picking up the win and Deontay Wilder getting in the ring, getting in his face. And which bangs the drum, and Showtime will make the announcement for a big-time heavyweight fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder later on in the week. Also on that card, you'll see Carl Frampton fighting for the WBO interim title. If that's something that that gets your juices flowing. That's some of the boxing going up coming up this weekend. Also, Top Rank has a card coming out of Atlantic City. Got Brian Jennings, Jesse Hart. They'll be in action, too. In addition to that, we also have on this show Top Rank guy. He is Tim Bradley Jr. You don't want to miss this interview. 30 minutes, hard-hitting interview with the Desert Storm himself, Tim Bradley. We'll talk about his career, his new broadcasting career, which is pretty interesting to hear from that side, a guy that has prepared his whole life to be a world champion, and now he's taking that same approach into broadcasting. We talked a little bit about his fighting career and a lot about the current game. He has some strong opinions on an Errol Spence versus Terrence Crawford fight, as well as the one fight that he wishes that he had in his career. Hint and rhymes with Bayweather. But big time interview with Tim Bradley. We also have a new, in case you missed it, a lot of stuff going on in the world of boxing. Some Dana White news, some Eddie Hearn news, of course. Manny Pacquiao keeps his name in the headlines. And also, we have a Twitter hitter segment that is just chock full of surprises. We got Mia St. John, a name I thought I'd never ever say on this show. And of course, Paulie Malignaggi is out of hiding, and he's tweeting everybody. Paulie is back on the prowl. He's getting those Twitter fingers going, him and McGregor going at it. You know, as they say, it's like a little bit of a slow time in boxing towards the end of August when everyone is on vacation and stuff, and there's not a lot of big fights being made. But that's not does not stop in boxing. There's so much going on. Everything is gearing up for the September run from September to December. And maybe a month from now, we see in the ring Triple G and Canelo, a fight that no one's really talking about. Not getting the press that we usually see. That's going to ramp up at the end of the month when HBO brings out 24/7. And what we're hearing right now is a lot of Triple G chirping. A lot of uncharacteristic chirps from Triple G talking about Canelo. Something to keep your eye on. But we're going to get right into it. We got, in case you missed it, coming up. It's a loaded episode Inside Boxing Live. Boxing's a sport that doesn't have an off-season, but everyone knows towards the end of the summer, that's when things slow down a little bit, but not this week. We have a jam-packed, in case you missed it. Let's start it off with Dana White. I read this past week that Dana White says Zuffa Boxing has stalled out a little bit. And there's a lot of people out there that want to say, I told you so. But this is just evidence, in my opinion, just how fractured the sport is at the moment. We have HBO, we have Showtime, we have ESPN+, we have DAZN. We have Facebook Watch, all different entities with different fighters on their rosters. Now you have a guy like Dana White coming into the picture here who has all the capital, has all the money, he has the star power to go along with it, but he has nowhere to go. And that's one of his quotes when he was talking about this. I think he was on the James Norton podcast, is that he has nowhere to go, really. Like, he has all the money, but he doesn't know where to zero in. Where in the UFC, he has a roster of, what, 500-plus fighters? So he can make any fight he wants. He orders Conor McGregor to fight Khabib, and that's the end of it. And with boxing, what he's starting to learn here is that he doesn't know where he wants to go. I mean, the rumors were Mikey Garcia. That was his prize target. Also, Anthony Joshua, and this was before Anthony Joshua re-upped with Matchroom. There was that rumor that he wanted to make him a $500 million athlete. And kind of be the face of Zuffa Boxing. But that quickly stalled out once that Joshua re-upped with Matchroom. So Dana White, he's having a little bit of issues here. He says that he was only going to dip his toe into the waters. I was actually there when he said that during the McGregor-Mayweather press conference. He wasn't going to jump all in. So he's kind of hedging his bets a little bit. But he says he's still going to go forward here. And I think he's learning that boxing is extremely fractured. And it's hard to work with different promoters. We know he has beefs with Arum. He's had beefs with De La Hoya. You know, he doesn't exactly see eye to eye with Showtime and their representatives. So I think Dana White right now is learning just how volatile the sport of boxing is. But I do think that he will sign a major boxer and he will get this going because the guy, he does have an ego and he does want to be successful. So that's the latest with Dana White. As for the biggest fight that's coming up on the boxing schedule, September 15th in Las Vegas, Triple G Canelo rematch. And the undercard is taking shape, and it's taking shape very nicely. We're looking at Jaime Munguia is rumored to be making another defense. He fought just a month ago on HBO against Liam Smith, and very exciting fighter and someone I wouldn't mind seeing on an undercard, even if it's against a guy that he's expected to beat. You know, I want to see more reps from him. I think the fans like him. He's got a fan-friendly style, and he's only like in his early 20s, so I'm all for that. And then we're going to see the return of Chocolatito. It's going to be another soft touch for him, as the last time he saw him, he was laid out flat on his back in the rematch with Sorung Visai. So Chocolatito could be making his return. But the co-main event is the one that should get you percolating a little bit, get the blood flowing, because it will be a bloodbath. And that's Spike O'Sullivan versus David Lemieux. I mean, that is perfect primer for Triple G Canelo. Two guys that come forward, two guys that need a big win in the 160-pound division. You got Spike O'Sullivan, who was rumored to face Canelo or Triple G, either of the two, when both fell out of the fight. And then David Lemieux, as we know, on the comeback trail, wants to make that last push to become a world champion again. So that undercard right there, if that's the case, then I'm all for it. And I think that fans will be really happy to see four exciting fights or four interesting fights, fights that you actually will turn on the TV at 9 p.m. and tune in to see Munguia. You want to tune in to see Chocolatito to see what he has left. And, of course, the bloodbath. That's usually when fans start to tune into pay-per-views, is during the second half of the co-main event. But this time, you're going to want to tune in and see the beginning. So let's hope it happens. Let's hope that these rumors actually turn out to be true and we have four great fights on the night of September 15th on HBO pay-per-view. Speaking of De La Hoya, he's interested in making a Spence Canelo fight at 160. Finally, this is a fight with Errol Spence that I can get behind. I don't want to hear about Mikey Garcia, Errol Spence. I do want to hear about Errol Spence versus Canelo Alvarez. Win or lose in his next fight, Canelo Alvarez, he's still going to be a major player in the sport of boxing. People forget how young Canelo is. What is he, 25, 26 years old? Been in the sport forever. So even if he loses, Canelo has his reputation. He has a lot of reputations right now. But one of his main reputations before he got into the drug problem or the PED problem was he'll fight anybody. He'll fight the best. And it's kind of like with Oscar De La Hoya did in his career. So a fight with Errol Spence, who is, yes, 147-pounder, but everything we know about Errol Spence, and he's a big 147-pounder. He has to boil down to get to 147. So if you see Spence at maybe 154, maybe they agree to a catch weight. You know, as we know, Canelo has his own weight. He got Canelo weight. That's a fight down the line that I think would be huge. That's a pay-per-view fight, in my opinion. There's not a lot of pay-per-view fights left in boxing. As we're seeing more and more of boxing move to TV, move to streaming, that traditional huge pay-per-view fight that we're going to see with Canelo and Triple G, yes, that's still out there. But there's not many huge pay-per-view events. I think a Spence-Canelo fight would be huge down the line. And I can see maybe, you know, Showtime and let's see with HBO if they stay in the picture. But Showtime getting involved with that and making a big bid for that. Moving over to another big-time promoter who's making a lot of noise in the U.S. market, it's Eddie Hearn. Eddie Hearn wants to sign Manny Pacquiao to DAZN, which I think is a match made in heaven. This is the type of signing that DAZN needs to make a splash. Yes, they have Anthony Joshua, and he's going to be fighting on their platform come September. Yes, they have some guys coming over to the U.S. We're going to see Big Baby Miller. We're going to see Jesse Vargas, and there's rumors of other fighters jumping over to DAZN. But you have a guy in Manny Pacquiao who still moves the needle. You have a guy in Manny Pacquiao that can still win some fights at 147. And who is sitting there in the Matchroom stable is Amir Khan. Amir Khan has been asking to fight Manny Pacquiao for the last 10 years. Now, finally, we can see it, but it checks off all the boxes for Manny Pacquiao. Big money. DAZN's got, you got big money to throw at some of these fighters. It's a fight out of the U.S. It will probably happen in the U.K. against Amir Khan. And it's a fight that Manny Pacquiao can win. So there it is right there. So I would be interested to see how this plays out. You know, Eddie Hearn's going to he can talk you into a lot of things. Very persuasive guy. So he sits down with Manny Pacquiao and tells him, listen, you're at the end of your career. I know you want to make the most money. I can throw a lot of money your way, and we can make you even richer. Or we can help any type of money problems you have, Manny Pacquiao, and we can make you a champ once again, too, on top of it. But there, Nick brings to our next and last topic here. Bob Arum says, not so fast, Eddie Hearn. He gets on a plane, probably a private jet. I don't think Arum's flying business class to the Philippines. And he's going to sit down Manny Pacquiao, his longtime pupil here, client, whatever you want to call him. So Pacquiao meets with Arum, and no deal was made at last that I checked on this issue. But you have to think that Arum does not like the fact that Eddie Hearn is going to come in here and potentially steal away and kind of cash out on Pacquiao, where Arum has put in all the work his whole career to make him into this global superstar. But you got to figure that Arum's telling him, listen, I can give you a fight with Lomachenko. I can give you a fight with Terrence Crawford. But where does the money come into play? How much money can Arum offer Manny Pacquiao to fight on ESPN Plus or ESPN? I mean, that's what they have right now. They don't have an HBO outlet anymore. They don't do business with HBO. Arum does not do business with Showtime. So it would most likely be on ESPN. Does ESPN have the type of money that can compete with the DAZN, who is just strictly focusing on boxing, where ESPN Plus has tons of other programming? So right now there is a bidding war for Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao, a guy that hadn't fought in over a year, was very much on the tail end of his career, but right now has all the major players coveting him. Only in boxing can you see something like that. We try to keep you caught up to date every single week here on Inside Boxing Live. This has been In Case You Missed It. All right, joining us now on the Jack Doyle's phone line is a former world champion, a former pound-for-pound great, and a current broadcaster for Top Rank on ESPN. Of course, I am talking about the great Tim Bradley, and he joins us right now at Inside Boxing Live. Tim, how you doing, my man?
Hey, I'm doing great. How you doing?
Doing well. Can't complain. I got some big shows coming up on ESPN, August 18th, August 25th. Before we get into some of your stuff that's going on or that went on in your career, talk about a little bit of your broadcasting career, man. I feel like I'm not going to be the first one to say this. I feel like you've improved every week, and right now we're seeing a guy that really knows the sport. And just talk a little bit about how you've been enjoying the broadcast game.
You know what? I really look forward to it. It's one of those things where, fighters, when they retire, they're unsure what's next. And I've always had an interest in broadcasting because I do know the sport. It was just, my delivery and how I can explain to the fans, what's going on in simpler terms. That was the hardest part for me. And Tessitore and Mark and Bernardo, the whole team, has groomed me and help me with that. So it's been great, man. I enjoy it. I learned that. I think I was 18 years old when I started really breaking down film. And the man that taught me how to break down film, his name was Al Mitchell, and he was a trainer at Marquette, Michigan, at the USOEC, former Olympic trainer. He had David Reed in the Olympics that won a gold medal. He taught us all how to read film and how to look, what to look for, and how to break down fighters. And so that was always a thing that I would do when I was getting ready to prepare for my fights. I would look at my film of the fighter that I was fighting, and I basically would put myself in the ring with him and just break down what he does, what he doesn't like, what he's good at, and just stay away from the things that he's good at. And what he doesn't like, I just throw it in his face all night. So.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I've always been amazed by like guys like Roy Jones Jr., who I think is one of the best broadcasters out there right now, and being able to identify things like 30 seconds into round one of the fight, he'll see something, or he'll like predict something that happens. And I see you do that a lot on ESPN. That's like a special gift, kind of going back to what you just mentioned.
Well, it's just habits. and knowing the boxing business, been in it my whole life,
mm-hmm.
and just knowing what to look for when guys are trying to set up certain punches. You can see how they're you know, how they shift their weight, you know, on the back foot or even on the front foot, or you see, you know, their opponent, you know, dropping their left hand, and you see him drop a feint, and you know what's going to come next, because they dropped the feint for a reason, just to see how the opponent's going to react, and then they're going to, you know, come with the setup punch. So it's just, you know, looking at film and being in the boxing business for, you know, my whole life, and everybody pretty much sets it up pretty much the same way. So yeah. It's not that hard. It's not that hard to figure out sometimes what's coming or what punch is going to be thrown next.
Now, Tim, let's go back to your first broadcast. Like, you have nerves. I mean, you've been in the ring with the biggest names in the sport. You've been in the biggest fights, fight of the years and stuff. Let's go back to something that, you know, that maybe you weren't accustomed to. The first fight you ever did broadcasting for ESPN, were you nervous? Like, tell us, like, did you have any funny stories from the night? I'd like to hear.
Well, I'm always nervous because, you know, people don't really realize that being nervous is just part of our system. It's human nature, man. You have to be nervous, especially when you care about something. So I'm always nervous. When I get ready, still right now, when I get ready for a show, I still feel like I'm getting ready to fight, you know, Manny Pacquiao or fight against Ruslan Pavlovnikov or Marquez or somebody, you know, who's a threat, because I really do care about my job and my work. And, you know, I definitely want to continue to do well. So, you know, it's just getting prepped up. It's no sleep. I don't sleep well at all. I stay up and I just pretty much study film and study my notes and things like that. And
do you study your copy box notes?
I study. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely study those notes.
Awesome. You're welcome.
I appreciate you, man, because I definitely want to know who's. Well, I look at the fights. I look at the fighters, you know, but the copy box notes help me with, you know, just give me an idea of, you know, how many punches are being thrown, you know, the days off. There's a lot of things that come with that that I like. Those are actually my favorite notes. I keep those notes.
Nice.
And I use them because they definitely help me, because I'm like, okay, this guy's really, really busy.
Right.
He throws 86 punches around, so it's great. I enjoy that.
Nice.
But you know, it's just I still get nervous, man. I still get nervous, like I'm getting prepared for a actual boxing match.
Wow.
It's just I just don't take the punches.
That's true. What was the first fight you did for ESPN? Was it the Pacquiao Horn?
Yes, it was the Pacquiao Horn, and I was with Tess, and I was with you know, at that time it was Teddy Atlas. And you know, it was nerve wracking. I mean, Teddy pretty much has been doing this his whole life,
right?
You know, 20 something years in the business. It was kind of hard, you know, me being a fighter and just seeing different things that, you know, that he didn't see, or, you know, that I thought that would make sense. And it was kind of hard to kind of go back and forth with him, you know, because, you know, Teddy knows boxing, and
right.
you can't tell that man anything. So, I was kind of timid, you know, at first, but I it was okay. I mean, I spoke up in the horn fight, but I should have spoke a little bit more, but I didn't want to get chewed out.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a tough one for your debut. I mean, not only is it the first time you're doing TV, but you're all the way in Australia. And from what it seemed, what it looked like, I mean, it was like the sun blasting on you. You guys are outside. It was a very tough fight to score. Maybe not that tough of a fight to analyze, because I thought Pacquiao won that one. So that's a really tough one for your debut.
Yeah, it was a tough fight. I just know how sometimes these judges can get lost in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
They actually start watching the fight instead of judging the fight. I've seen it time after time where it's happened. When a fight is, you know, if there's a household name fighter and if he looks like he's being dominated, which, you know, Pacquiao, like I always tell people, I say, you know, Pacquiao won the boxing match, but he lost the fight.
Right.
You know, after the fight, it's like, who would you rather be after the fight? Pacquiao was bloody. He was cut.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I thought he lost the last three rounds in the fight. I thought, you know, early on, I thought Horn was able to to back them up and put them on a rope.
Right.
Whether the punches are landing or not, you guys, everybody has to understand that when you have a judge that, you know, if you're against the rope and he's behind you, or not behind you, but on the other side of the opponent, and
yeah.
he's welling on you, he can't see what's landing. He can't see what's landing. All he sees is that you're bagged up against the rope and you're getting worked.
Yeah, he doesn't know what the guy against the rope's doing, right?
You really don't know what the guy against the rope is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if every shot is landing, but all you see is that he's getting worked.
Right.
And so, all right, he went. So Horn wins that round. So there was a lot of swing rounds in there too. I watched the fight several times. I still feel Pacquiao won the fight by 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, he won the boxing match, but he didn't win the fight.
So you went back and you watched a fight. Now, I'm sure you went back and watched a lot of your fights that you've been in. Now, do you go back and watch fights that you've broadcasted now? Is that got to be a totally different experience now?
Yes. Yeah.
Why did I say this? Back. And why didn't I do that?
Yeah, because I miss sometimes, you know, it's good to have, you know, Chester Cordes been doing this for years.
Oh, yeah.
He's literally the LeBron James of broadcasting.
I agree with you. He's been on our show before. We've known him forever. Joe Tessitore is one of the best broadcasters in any sport.
In any sport. And, you know, he's on Monday Night Football now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he has Witten and stuff. And, you know, he has a lot of new guys that he has to train up. And there's not a better guy for it. So, you know, he just makes you right out the gate believe in yourself. And he says, you know this stuff. You know, you've been doing this your whole life. Like, I believe in you. You have to believe in yourself. So he gives you so much confidence and so much advice
mm-hmm.
on what to do, what not to say. Because some things there's some things that I want to say, but he says, don't say that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, you got to be careful. I mean, there's a Disney company you're working for. You got to be careful with some of the things you really want to say. Because we've all been there sitting in the stands or we're watching a fight. And it's like, it's a primal thing. You're watching a fight and you want to say things that just come out. But that's part of the game. You got to be a little more calculated, right?
Yeah, because I wanted to say balls. I was like, can I say testicles? And he's like, Tim, you cannot say testicles on air. You understand that? I was like, okay, Tess. I was like, well, what can I say? And he was just like, and then Mark was like, say onions. Onions are fine.
Yeah, that's when you go to Mark. That's when you go to the wordsmith. Go to Mark. He'll tell you all the things you can and can't say, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you can say testicles. I feel like you can't say balls, but you can say testicles on ESPN.
Yeah, because it's like the right term to say, right?
I mean, that's right, you go to the doctor and he goes, I don't want to get into all that, but I feel like that you could get away with saying it's boxing. Come on, man, this isn't chess. We're watching boxing, but you bring up guys go ahead.
Go ahead. You can't say it.
No.
Just can't say it.
Yeah.
But you know, I do go back and I see like my mistakes and things like that, and I'm like, okay, I got to look at the camera more. Okay, I'm looking off in the distance. Like, I can't lose focus.
Yeah.
And why did I say that? Oh, my God, I stumbled on that word. It's just, like, so much stuff. You know, and they told me that, like, you're never going to have a perfect broadcast. And the minute you have a perfect broadcast, that's the minute you're not a broadcaster, Tim.
Yeah, and what I've heard is you're only good as your last show. So you can have a great fight or you can have a great performance or, in your case now, you can have a great broadcast. But if you don't have another one the next week, people are not going to remember your good one. They're going to remember the time that Tim Bradley said balls on the air or something. Something ridiculous.
Yes. It's very tough. It's very tough. But, you know, we're human.
Mm-hmm.
I'm new to this. ESPN believes in me. All my bosses and everybody, they believe that I can do it. I have the knowledge, and I'm spreading it little by little.
Yeah, I agree.
And the hardest part for me is not giving the fighters completely away. So, like, if when I'm breaking down stuff, like, mm-hmm. I have my keys, my points, and stuff like that, I pick certain ones that are, you know, that I think that are, you know, detrimental to the fighter, and I think he should pay attention to it
right.
when I'm telling him, you know, stop dropping your hands when you're pulling back. Like, that's a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the hardest thing for me is during the broadcast, not actually telling the fans how to, like, beat this fighter. I think that's the hardest thing for me because I just see certain things that the fighter doesn't like, and if you continue to do it, you know, you can beat him. And not just, you know, the guy that he's facing, but, like, anybody
mm-hmm.
can beat him. And so it's really hard for me not to, like, completely just give away, you know, each fighter in the ring and break them down and on all their flaws, you know. So I have to
right,
sabotage,
yeah. You
like
want to focus on the
me.
Positives because you can easily go down the rabbit hole, like this guy doesn't have a chance. But you have to sell it to the audience that you know maybe this guy is the B side, but he does have a chance to beat the A side.
You know, you want to know something?
Yes.
I've been getting my foot put in my mouth like for the last couple of shows because there's I look at certain fighters and certain styles and I watch the film on them. And let me give you an example of Diaz that fought a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And he fought against a guy that only had 25 Ito.
Right.
He only had 25 fights professionally, no amateur experience at all.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Diaz is like an astounding amateur in Puerto Rico. And, you know, he's a really good, you know, boxer, puncher type style. And I'm like, this kid should be able to, you know, dominate Ito. You know, Ito has very limited experience, never fought outside Japan. And this kid, Ito, comes in the ring and just completely, like, demolishes
right.
Diaz. You know, takes it to him, beats him in every department, you know, every distance. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like, you know, this is like a rude awakening for me. So it does experience really matters, you know, is it, you know, having a good game plan, believing in yourself, does that matter more?
Right.
And, you know, so I'm like, man. And then the fight before that, same thing. And I'm just like, man, I got to stop giving these guys.
Well, the fans do that at home, too. The fans do that at home, too. They see a guy with the pedigree like you talked about. Maybe they do it with body type. They see a guy who's absolutely ripped like you were in your career going up against a guy
yeah.
with a little more puffier midsection. And they go, oh, wow, the guy that's ripped is going to win. And then it's usually the other way around. So one thing I've learned working at CompuBox is I never judge like a book by its cover. It never ends up that way. And the same thing with broadcasting. So it's an interesting point you bring up there. But now that you're a member of the media – do you have a greater appreciation for media members and broadcasters than you did, but maybe when you were in the game?
Yes. Yes, I do. I really do. I have a great appreciation for them because especially when they're getting it right, man, when they're getting it right. Like, I appreciate listening to Roy. I appreciate listening to, like, to Paulie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's another great broadcaster, I think, boxing broadcaster, Andre Ward, another great one. But I when they're getting it right, man, I really enjoy listening to it. And especially when fighters are not, the B-side is really not getting a whole lot of love. You know, I really like it when they split the attention, you know, from the B-side to the A-side.
Right.
So, you know, I like that, man. You know, just keeping it real, keeping it 100 with the fans. That's what it's about. That's what the fans want to hear. They don't want to hear just, you know, oh, this, you know, the A side and, you know, just the story about the A side. They want to hear the B side, too, or the guy that's actually winning the fight. So,
that's something I've noticed more and more. That's something I've noticed more and more in the sport is the fans, they don't want to be sold when they're watching a fight. They want to just hear the commentators break down what's going on in the ring.
That's it. That's all it is. That's basically it. And then the coolest part about my job is that I can be bluntly and can be completely honest. That's what I'm there. That's what I'm paid to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think a certain way, it's not necessarily going to be – I don't think it's necessarily going to be true. It's still a boxing match, but this is what should – I think that should happen or may could happen, but sometimes that's not the way it goes.
Right.
And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. You know, that just makes it more interesting for the fans. But the fact that, like, if I just say, like, hey, this guy doesn't belong in the ring with this guy because he has no experience. He, you know, he's fought against, you know, cab drivers or whatever. You know, if I say something like that on air, then it's okay. It's fine. It's what I believe. And that's the coolest thing about my job is that I can be completely bluntly honest at the right time, you know.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're enjoying it, man. It sounds like you're really enjoying the broadcasting.
Hey, I really do enjoy it. I really do. I can't wait to this weekend because I think these fights this weekend is going to be pretty interesting. So
yeah, we got Brian Jennings and Jesse Hart.
Yeah, Jennings, Jesse Hart, Dimitrenko, and you got Gavonsky fighting. Gavonsky's not a bad fighter. He's a really tough, tough guy. He really is. Hart, same thing.
Philly guy.
Tough guy.
Yeah.
But Dimitrenko's a big guy, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got some of the longest arms in boxing by Jennings.
Yeah.
He has an 84-inch reach,
wow.
Man. Like, that's bigger than Muhammad Ali's. That's Sonny Liston type arm reach.
Well, Well, that's why he was able to get in there with Klitschko. Yeah, he didn't get the decision that he wanted, but you know, he's a shorter, stockier heavyweight. But the fact that his arms are that long gives him a little bit of a mix up for some of the other things, right?
Yeah, it's unreal. It's unreal. I believe right now, I think he has longer arms than anyone in the sport, even longer than what's the boy, the other heavyweight, Joshua?
Wow.
Or Wilder.
That's nuts. That is crazy. Yeah. Hear. And then the following week, on August 25th, Ray Beltran, Jose Pedraza. And the reason that fight, and I mean, it's a great fight in itself, but the winner of that one is going to get Lomachenko. Now, you've called a lot of Lomachenko's fights. Jorge Linares, go down the list of some of the fights he's been featured on ESPN. Do you feel like he is the best fighter in the game right now? And who can potentially stop Lomachenko?
Well, right now, I think Terrence Crawford is the best fighter in the sport right now.
All right.
Because everything he can do on the left side, he can do on the right side. You know, all the accolades that he's won, all the championships he's won. I think he just has a dominant style, man. And I think Terrence Crawford, honestly, to me, is pretty much right now the guy that, you know, has the art of boxing. The art of boxing is leaving, man. He's leaving the sport. Loma has it too. Loma, you know, fights off angles, which is what is the art of boxing. You know, hit, don't get hit, fights off angles. Two completely different styles. Loma, you know, likes to stay mid-distance, you know, He has a lot of advantages, especially because he has short arms. He has like 65, he has a 65-inch reach. And, you know, he has really short arms for you know, a lightweight. And, but I love his style. I don't know if he goes up in weight. I think if he fights like a guy like Manny Pacquiao, he might be in trouble. I think if he fights a guy like Mikey, there's a possibility Mikey could be too big and just, you know, because like I said, Loma has to come mid-distance range. He has short arms. He has to come there.
Right.
So he has to come down that middle every now and then. And Mikey has really good timing, really good legs, really good balance, and he has pretty good defense. As far as, you know, keeping his hands at home and making guys fall short.
Yeah, that's what Lomachenko did against Linares. I mean, Lomachenko versus, he had to get inside. He had to take a beating for a little bit just to get inside to land that body shot.
Yes. But as far as skill-wise, I mean, he's probably one of the best skill-wise with Terrence Crawford. These guys are running the race as far as who's the best fighter in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
My pick is Terrence Crawford, but I love Loma. I think he's phenomenal. I think that, you know, Ray, I love Ray. I love him to death, but I just don't think he's ready for a guy like Loma. You know, I just don't think he's ready for a guy like Loma. I think Loma's just too quick and get in and out on Ray. Ray's a straight coming for a fighter that eats punches. Like it's breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you know, he's a tough guy. He can punch, and he's going to do a lot of punishment in that fight. And I don't think it's going to be better suited for Ray if he fought against Loma. But you know, he's a champion, and the champion has to face, you know, the best guys out there.
Yeah, that's something that we're seeing more and more, like a lot of social media stuff, and like, you know, fighters are calling each other out. They're putting pressure on the networks to make the fights, putting pressure on their promoters to make the fight. And you're seeing this a lot from Terrence Crawford. I mean, I don't know if you follow along with all the Twitter stuff, but, you know, last week he was going out with Errol Spence. That's the fight everyone wants to see. And then this last week, Danny Garcia and Terrence were kind of going back and forth. But I want to talk about Crawford versus Spence, a fight that everyone's talking about or wants to see down the line. It might not ever happen because of, you know, the politics in boxing. But, you know, how would you handicap a Terrence Crawford versus Errol Spence fight at 147?
Everybody needs to listen up, man. Terrence Crawford is the best fighter on the planet.
Okay.
Errol Spence has a lot of juice, you know, a lot of sauce. These young kids, they got a lot of sauce. You know, momentum moving forward. Everybody likes him. He's big. He's strong. You know, this kid he's fundamentally sound. But Terrence Crawford is the same. You know, fundamentally sound. It's strong. Everybody thought that Horn was going to be able to bully him. Terrence looked like he wasn't the 140-pounder moving up to 147 pounds. He bullied Horn in that fight. And Terrence sees what I see. And Errol Spence, he sees the same thing, and that's the reason why he's saying, like, come on, serve him up on the platter. I'll eat them for dinner. I'll eat them for lunch. Because he sees exactly what I see. He sees a guy that's one-dimensional. Earl Smith, to me, as good as he is, he's great with the basics, you know, the jab, the straight left hand, but he's one-dimensional. His footwork is terrible. No footwork. He's straight directly in front of you all the time. It's not hard to fight a guy when it's straight directly in front of you. You got to get past that shield, which is his jab. He has a strong, extremely strong jab, and he sometimes falls with it to keep you at bay, you know. But Terrence has just as long arms as he does. Terrence is slightly shorter than him, and Terrence knows how to get in. He has good legs, good footwork to be able to outmaneuver, in my opinion, a one-dimensional Earl Spence to me. So that's what I'm going to say. If they fight, I'm Terrence Crawford all day. I'll bet my house on it.
You probably have a really nice house, too, so that's I like to take you up on that bet, maybe.
Any day of the week, man. If they have to fight.
Yes, they do.
They have to fight. And when they do fight, Terrence is going to beat up. He's going to beat up on Earl Smith.
Wow.
It won't be early. It's going to be later. He's going to beat up on him.
He's going to beat him
in the inside where everybody thinks Earl's going to have opportunity to land against Terrence. He's going to beat him up in the inside. He's going to bag him up. He's going to push him back. And he's going to beat him up when he's going out, too.
And you say it has to be made. You say it has to be made in the sport of boxing. I absolutely agree with you. They have to make that happen.
It's a fight. It's a fight that, because Earl to me, he's a great fighter, man. But Earl to me, really, if you look at what Terrence has done so far, and you look at what Earl's done so far, Earl still, to me, is still green.
You got a little late start. Yeah, you got a little bit of a late start. But a lot of times with this, it's like everyone can't fight the same resume. It's not like in baseball or football where everyone kind of has the same schedule. You know this. You didn't get to fight like Floyd Mayweather. But you kind of have to just go on who they fought and who was in front of them that time, right?
Well, it's experience. It's experience. Terrence has been in big, huge fights. I know Spence went over and fought against Kell Brook, and he won that fight. Brook was in that fight until his eye got tore up,
right,
you know, from, you know, Golovkin or whatnot. But, you know, to me, Brook was in that fight. I thought it was a close fight, you know. I thought Earl started pulling away late because Brook had a hard time dealing with that eye.
Right.
But he beat him. All right? He beat him. All right. But, and then he beat a Peterson who was faded, in my opinion, faded. You know, but those are like the two biggest names that I see on his resume. Whereas Terrence, he basically beat everybody at 140 pounds. Besides this new CAG pro grade that's coming up,
right,
who has very limited experience as well, and he dominated the division there. And he's coming up, and he fought a rugged, tough guy in Horn, and he won a championship in his first fight at 147 pounds. And he's willing, just like Earl Spence, willing to face anybody at any given time or place or where.
I
think he beat Danny.
Okay.
I think he beats Danny, too. I think he beats Danny. I think he beats Sean Porter. I think he beats Thurman. I think he beats I don't even know if Thurman's going to come back and fight.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. It's just like I've seen this on Twitter, and it's a very valid argument about what's more impressive – to you, the fact that Terrence Crawford disposed of everyone at 140 in really impressive fashion, or Danny Garcia fighting some bigger names and maybe not looking as sharp or as dominant as Terrence Crawford did. What do you think?
No, Spence looks dominant. You know, Spence looked dominant. His last performance, he fought a guy that was longer than he was, and you know, gave him a little issues, but he dominated, ended him with a body shot. He's coming off of I think it's like 12 consecutive knockouts or something like that, which is impressive, because it's not about just winning; it's about how you win.
Right.
And it doesn't matter who you fight. And it's the same thing with Manny Pacquiao. You know, everybody's like, oh, he fought a tailor-made opponent and this and that. But leading up to the fight, all you hear is everybody, oh man, Matisse can punch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Pacquiao got to be careful. And then you hear some people saying that, oh, he might have to pull himself off the canvas and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect tailor-made guy. But it's like, hey, he still got in there. And it's how he won the fight. That's mm-hmm. what's impressive.
Right.
You know, it's the fact that he stopped Matisse. That's impressive. you know. And being at 39 years old, it doesn't matter what Matisse was or won and this and that, but because he was fierce when he was getting ready to fight him. Mm-hmm. Oh, watch out for his big punch.
Yeah, they got to sell
but
the fight.
Now,
yeah.
the fact that yeah, because everybody's like, oh, he can punch. And I'm just like, he's going to get stopped. You know,
and he did.
Matisse going to get stopped.
He did
get stopped because he's too, because Pacquiao's just too fast and too strong. And still at, you know, with his B game, still at 39 years old, he's better than a lot of guys' A game. And a lot of people don't really realize that Pac can still compete with these guys at welterweight.
I think so. You're right. I always wanted to ask you this about Manny Pacquiao. I feel like you have gotten so many Pacquiao questions and a lot of your career. Oh, there's three great fights with Pacquiao, and I can just sense that you have a ton of respect for him just from the way you talk about him. I know you do, but I want to ask you, and if I'm out of line, you can tell me right now, do you have a lot of respect for him too because of the fact that you fought him three times and it really changed your career from a financial standpoint given what he brings to the table?
No, it's not even about that.
Okay.
It's not even about the money. It's about the fact that I know what my ability was.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the championships that I won, I probably shouldn't have never won. But the fact that, you know, my heart, my determination, the skill, my IQ, my ring IQ, I was able to beat these guys. I fought the guy named Kendall Hall, who was one of the biggest punchers in the sport at
yep.
the time. With hand speed, he had size advantage over me and everything. But I did what he doesn't like all night, and I took that chance, and I gambled. And I had to pull myself off the canvas to come back and win the fight. So I know that I'm a tough threat to anybody in the division. If I was still fighting, I would still be tough to anybody in the division
yeah.
at 147 pounds. I still would be tough, you know, and I compete with this guy. The fact that Pac was able to beat me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the way he did it and went about it, I'm just impressed with that because I'm tough. I'm tough, I'm durable,
yeah.
and this is a guy that was able to, you know, had more stamina than I did. He had more speed than I did, you know, more footwork than I did, and he blew me away with it.
Wow.
And I'm just like, wow, I got the unbelievable respect for this young, this you know, older gentleman, Manny Pacquiao, because he's the only guy in my career that beat me. He's the only guy, you know.
Yeah.
Marquez couldn't even touch me. Marquez couldn't even touch me.
No, he didn't. Where does one
so,
fighter out there, one fight you wish you could have had? Is it Mayweather?
It was money, yeah.
Oh, I wanted that fight so bad. I wanted to see that. I think a lot of boxing fans wanted to see that. Tell us how you would fight Mayweather. How do you think that would shake out?
No, I mean, how I would fight Mayweather? Mayweather is a guy that can do pretty much anything in the ring. He's a guy that can press forward. He's a guy that can box him back, going backwards as well. He's really good. He's really sneaky, and he has a good jab. A good jab as well. But the thing is that with Mayweather, you have to out-jab him. Somehow you have to land your jab.
Mm-hmm.
Cotto was able to do it.
Right.
Cotto was able to do it. And then when you get him on that angle, Cotto kind of gave you the blueprint on how to get Mayweather.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, but the Cotto problem is Cotto kept his head down in the middle, and Mayweather noticed that and knew that. And so Mayweather would lift him up with that uppercut. He would
mm-hmm.
throw that jab, that right uppercut, sweep with the hook, and then come back right back to it, the double uppercut,
right.
you know, either right side or left side. So he knew that's what Cotto did. But as far as like getting to Mayweather, I think that was his toughest fight was Cotto
mm-hmm.
because Cotto had a, you know, really good jab. Cotto was a natural left-handed guy and
yeah,
had a really
yeah.
good jab.
And he was awkward, too. I remember being in the locker room with Mayweather after the fight, and Mayweather was talking to all his people out there, and he was saying how awkward Cotto was and how he was willing to, like, you know, go in with his head and take some punches. And I feel like you kind of maybe would have done the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, shoot, one of the things is that I didn't get a lot of angles with my defense. My defense, I didn't get a lot of credit for my defense. And then I didn't, you know, and I have pretty good footwork. So I just felt like I was able to be offensive-minded and then be defensive-minded and then be offensive-minded again against Mayweather.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard,
and
man.
It's
tough.
And have a better chance because the Mayweather, see, when Mayweather countered, he caught and shoot, and catch and shoot.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys, they would sit there. And so for me, I just felt like, you know, I knew what he was going to be doing or what he's going to try to do. So I would let my hands go, and then I would put myself in the defensive posture or defensive area where he couldn't hit me with that counter.
Bam.
I'll be ready for it.
We fans, we got robbed of that one. That's a fight, and I really, really wanted to see would be Tim Bradley versus Floyd Mayweather. Man.
Yes. Stepping on the gas pedal with him, man.
Yep.
You see, any time he got bagged up, and really got the pressure put on him, you know, there was holes in his defense. There's definitely holes in his defense. Wow. So, Madonna, you saw that when he fought against Marcos Madonna. Yep. You saw that when he fought against, we even go back when he fought against Castillo.
Oof.
You know, Castillo bagged him up because Castillo had, you know, pretty good defense coming in, moving forward, moving his head, and then attacking Mayweather to the body and just hitting him anywhere he could.
Yeah.
And he had some success.
Now, Tim, it's pretty clear you have the fire still in you. I can hear it. I can when you say you're tough and you're durable and all that. Do you ever think about coming back?
Always, every day.
Would you do it though? I mean, you're only 34?
I'll be 35 at the end of the month, but the broadcasting career, it's important to me, and I want to give 100%. In that area, I think about it every day. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of opportunities out there. I wouldn't mind mixing it up. You know, I wouldn't mind mixing it up with the top 147s out there, you know, especially if I was to come back and get my feet wet first. You know, I've been out for almost 2 years now, so mm-hmm. that's a tough challenge in itself. And I haven't taken a punch in 2 years, so. That's the hardest part about coming back and having ring rust and, you know, being able to absorb a punch
right.
to the head or the body.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part about the layoff. So that's something I would have to worry about. But, man, I'm just competitive, man. I just love boxing, and I love the sport. And like I said, to me, I just think that the sport definitely is losing. You know, the art of boxing is definitely losing, man. We're losing the art of boxing, man. All these trainers, man, they need to step their game up, man, because as I'm broadcasting these fights and I see these fighters do make the same mistake over and over, pulling back with their hands down, you know, never going out backwards instead of going out to the side, you know, not even moving their head, no head movement. You know,
they don't jab anymore either. There's no jabbing anymore in the sport.
No, they don't jab. They don't set up anything off the jab. All they do is they come hunting forward. They don't even move their head.
Right.
And if you try to step back just to, you know, to use their legs as defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just leaving the sport, man. It really is. And when I see a really good fighter, talented fighter like Terrence Crawford, it makes me happy. When I see a guy like, you know, Loma, that makes me happy.
Right.
Or a guy like Teofimo Lopez. You know, when I see a guy catch and shoot, a guy that moves on angles that, you know, has that flair to him, man. That makes me happy. Or a guy like, you know, Shakur Stevenson,
yep, yep.
You know, a young guy like that, that makes me happy because this is the art of boxing. Hit, don't get hit, you know, Sugar Shane and go, we can go way back, man. Sugar Ray Leonard.
Right. The art of boxing.
Pernell Whitaker,
mm-hmm.
You know, Roy Jones. I mean, you can go back and you can watch all these fighters, man. Those guys had skills, man. They had skills.
Wow. I agree with you.
It's just different. Now it's just Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
I got that actually on my set right now. But, Tim, I can talk to you all day about boxing. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. We really like watching you on Top Rank on ESPN, doing a great job. Who knows? Maybe one day we'll see you in the ring once again. But for now, you're going to be outside the ring. We're going to be outside the ring in your suit, breaking down the sport like no other. Tim Bradley, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Appreciate you, man.
All right, talk to you soon. All right, I said last week I wasn't going to do a Twitter hitter segment, and I said this week I wasn't going to do a Twitter hitter segment until I opened up my phone and I see straight chaos on my timeline all week long. So we got a little Twitter hitter action for you this week. We'll start with Terrence Crawford, arguably the best pound-for-pound fighter in the game right now, and right now he's showing that he's the best pound-for-pound tweeter in the game. Last week he went at Errol Spence. They've been going at it for a while now. Now Danny Garcia is his latest target. And that's when Terrence hopped on Twitter, and he said, "Yo, Danny Swift, look, you didn't do what I did at 140. I was the undisputed, something you never was." From there, he goes on to say that he was scared to come up to fight some of the best at 147. Crawford then said that, "Listen, I went up to 147. I fought Jeff Horn in my first fight. I didn't have a step-up fight. You know, I didn't get handed a belt." So that's what Terrence Crawford said. Of course, Danny Swift Garcia is going to respond. I kind of like what Danny Garcia says here. "Listen, I'm not going to go back and forth with you. I'm fighting someone else. So, a.k.a., I have Sean Porter in my sights. Why am I going to sit here and talk to you, Terrence Crawford? This fight between you and I is probably never, ever going to happen. but you have no notable wins. That's what Danny Garcia says to Terrence Crawford. I already beat you for free. Why would I do it for some millions? Apparently, that leads you to believe that they had a sparring session that no one ever saw or heard about that Danny Garcia claims that he got the best of. That's not what Terrence Crawford thinks, because he hops back on, and he says, you're only as good as your last win, and that last time I checked, I whipped your ass last. So apparently, Terrence Crawford thinks that he won that sparring session. That's when Terrence Crawford then had to hop back on and say, listen, I can go on and on about your resume, as well as about who I beat. The only person I give you credit for is Amir Khan, and that's others. You get no points for none of them, says Terrence Crawford. But here's how I rate this one. Official CompuBox rating for this Twitter beef is I have to give the win to Danny Garcia. How many times have you been in an argument on Twitter, or you've been in an argument with someone, and you said, listen, I'm not going to go back and forth with you, and then you proceed to go back and forth with them all day long? He let Terrence Crawford start to instigate this. He said, I'm not going to go back and forth with you, and he didn't. And then Terrence Crawford went on and on and on. But it led a lot of people on Twitter to go down a rabbit hole of who they think was better at 140 or 147. Like, do you put more emphasis on the fact that Terrence Crawford was undisputed at 140, or do you put more emphasis on some of the names that Danny Garcia fought? We're just going on names. Not going on actual results in fights that you thought that Danny Garcia lost that he actually won. But in my opinion, I think Danny Garcia has the better resume than Terrence Crawford, and I don't even think it could be debated. But on the flip side, Terrence Crawford beat his opponents that were put in front of him a lot more soundly and more convincingly than Danny Garcia did. It was a nice little debate on Twitter, and something that I kept an eye on for this very segment. But we move forward here now with Conor McGregor. You know, I was having a perfectly fine Saturday until I opened up Twitter and I see that Conor McGregor decided to retweet MMA History Today, which said it was 1 year ago today when Dana White released the video of Conor McGregor dropping Paulie Malignaggi. And there's the picture of Paulie on his back, McGregor standing over him. That's when McGregor, he quote tweets it and says, time flies when you're on your ass. You know, this just like sent like the bat signal and went up to Brooklyn, New York, Bensonhurst, New York, where Paulie Malignaggi resides. And this led me to believe, or which I learned, that Paulie Malignaggi had not tweeted since July 13th. Over a month, or close to a month, no tweets from the Twitter king, Paulie Malignaggi. But no, if McGregor's going to chirp at him, Malignaggi's going to take the bait, and he's going to go right in, because this right here is his Super Bowl. He loves talking about Conor McGregor, especially that infamous sparring session. That's when Malignaggi hopped on and says, dude has two kids, which I'm pretty sure McGregor only has one kid, but maybe there's one that we don't know about. Dude has two kids and an ass-kicking since this, and he still lives off a fake knockdown that he knows wasn't real. McGregor, your feelings are still hurt? Don't get your feelings hurt, you little bitch. It's still our little secret. Don't run for your life when they ring the bell. It wasn't just there. He went on to start responding to fans, of course, the MMA fanboys, as he call them, and he says things like, you know, McGregor's going to run in his fight, or he's going to, not only is he going to run in his fight with Khabib, he's going to pull out of the fight a week before. So Malignaggi is now Nostradamus as well. But this was funny to me because we hadn't heard from Malignaggi on Twitter in a very long time. Who knows why he's been taking a month-long hiatus. Some people, give up social media for a lot of different reasons. But the fact that he got back on and the first thing he's tweeting about is McGregor is just, it's just so classic. And more and more of that, I'm sure he's going to keep on going, because Malignaggi is one person we know does not let a beef die out. That's for sure. But going forward here on Twitter hitters, this is something that came out of nowhere. Lance Pugmire put out a tweet. He interviewed Triple G, Lance Pugmire, with the LA Times. Been on the show before. Great reporter, gets a lot of good inside stuff. But he was talking about Triple G. Well, Triple G had some really stern stuff to say about Canelo, saying he's the most unpleasant and dirtiest opponent I've ever had. Dirty in the taking of substances that are prohibited and trying to blame other people. So that's something a lot of people can agree about, is that Canelo, he did PEDs, or whether or not you believe he did it, whatever, and he blamed all this other thing, blamed the meat, he blamed everyone under the sun but himself. That's what we can all agree about. That's when Mia St. John, if you don't know who Mia St. John is, to the casual boxing fan, I'm sure the hardcores know, she's one of the first women boxers to kind of gain fame and notoriety in the mid-90s, late-90s. I didn't even know that she fought in 2016. I mean, that's crazy because I think she's over 50 years old. She said, whatever. Everyone does it, and everyone in boxing knows it. And she's talking about steroids. And this is a case where someone just tweets something, and they don't think it's going to be picked up, or they just think it's going to be lost in the replies of someone with a lot of followers like Lance Pugmire. No, it's not going to happen when you're Mia St. John, who is a former big-time name in the sport of boxing. And that's when all these fighters started picking up on it. You had Tony Bellew. You had Carl Frampton. You had the Serrano sisters. You had Shields. You had all these boxers say, you know what? No. I think it was Sergio Mora as well. No, not everyone does steroids. Not everyone. Don't just lump all of us in there just because you have a broad, you want to get some more fame. You want to maybe have a resurgence in boxing. And it led to a long debate, and she went on to call Lance Pugmire and tell him or reveal that she did steroids for 20 of her fights and that she knows all the fighters today that are on it. And so I think this is a fluid situation. I think that a lot more we're going to hear from Mia St. John and try to figure out if, first of all, if she's valid. Number two, when did she do the steroids in these fights, if anyone really cares about that. Mostly, it's going to be about, who does she know that's on steroids? Because we've seen this in different sports. We saw it in baseball with Jose Canseco when he first came out and he started naming names. Everyone kind of wrote him off and was like, nah, this guy's trying to sell a book. He's got ulterior motives. I mean, this guy has a very poor reputation. So, you know, I'm not ready to kind of say that she's wrong. I want to hear her out and see all the facts here and kind of get to the bottom of it. But it's pretty interesting that Mia St. John can kind of just come out here and kind of throw everyone under the bus, which ticked off a lot of fighters. And finally, can't do a Twitter segment if we don't mention the great James Bagg Jr., one of the greatest Twitter personalities of all time, in my opinion. And the backstory on this, here's a picture of our friend of the show, Brian Campbell, the great Brian Campbell, CBS Sports. He's wearing a personalized robe with his name on the back, given to him from the Contender Series. It's part of like a media thing where they want to get people to get some more notoriety or try to get the word out there for the show. So he posts a picture looking mean, Campbell grilling in front of a mirror with Campbell on the back. That's when James Bagg, he just loves to go at Campbell, whether it's about his wrestling tweets. He just loves to rip into Campbell. It's all good fun because he doesn't go too far with it. He goes pretty far with other guys, but not Campbell. That's when he tweeted at George Foreman and says, George, rate my robe. And clearly, it's not James Bagg's robe. That's Campbell. That's when Foreman responds. He doesn't know. He doesn't know who James Bagg is. He doesn't know his shtick on Twitter. That's when George Foreman said, cool rope. I don't see a rope anywhere in there. But guess what, Foreman? You got bagged. And it happens to the best of us. But that's it for Twitter hitters. If you have any tweets that you want to get featured here on Inside Boxing Live, use the hashtag Twitter hitters and we'll post it on the show. Okay, that's a wrap for another edition of Inside Boxing Live. We have to thank our guest, Tim Bradley, for coming on the show. Really good interview. Some good stuff there. 30 minutes. He really laid it out for us. A real boxing purist, Tim Bradley. Really left it out in the ring during his fighting days. And now he's a broadcaster, learning every single week. He's his own worst critic at times. He got Kriegel telling him what he can say and what he can't say. And most of all, what I took away from that interview was a guy that still has the fire burning within him. I mean, when I brought up a comeback, he said, yes, right away. I think about it every single day. I look at the 147-pound division, and I want to fight the best. So don't be surprised if you see a story that Tim Bradley is contemplating coming back into the ring and stepping foot in there. As for this upcoming week, we have the return of Tyson Fury, the heavyweight division. And I saw some headlines that Deontay Wilder will be making the trip, and we'll be ringside for this, so I can see it right now. Fury wins the fight. Deontay Wilder gets into the ring. They go face-to-face, and then Showtime announces that the two will be fighting later in 2018. That's just my opinion. Carl Frampton will be also in action this weekend. And then over in Atlantic City, Top Rank will be back as Bryant Jennings gets into the ring. Jesse Hart as well. I will be heading to Atlantic City myself to cover some MMA action, PFL, on NBC. I'm actually looking forward to seeing what Atlantic City has to offer. I know that the Hard Rock Casino was buzzing last weekend, according to HBO's Jim Lampley, seeing a real big resurgence with legalized gambling. So something to keep your eye on as a boxing fan, as Atlantic City makes its big triumphant return in the world of boxing. If you don't subscribe to the podcast, do so now. Inside Boxing Live on Apple. For Nick Canobbio, our super producer, I'm Dan Canobbio saying we'll see you next week.